Hi, my name's Londe Yusuf.
And my name is Reggie Williams.
And we're the co-founders of Black Film Space. Black Film Space is a grassroots organization dedicated to enhancing the skill sets of Black filmmakers and building a community of creatives. We host events such as screenwriting workshops, panels, mixers, and other events that are designed to support Black content creators.
In the next episode of the Black Film Space podcast, we interview Mike Sargent, a film critic, writer, and director. Mike is the chief film critic for WBAI Radio's Real World, the host of WBAI's Night Shift, and the creator and host of Arise on Screen, which is the first African-American hosted film review television show. We talk with Mike about what makes a good film critic, the relationship between a filmmaker and a film critic, his process for reviewing films, and much more. And now, on to our interview. All right, Mike, thank you so much for joining us on the Black Film Space podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, and I'm very happy to be here.
We're happy that you're here as well. I personally have never spoken to a film critic, so this should be an interesting conversation. They say everybody's a film critic. How do you make sure that your voice stands out from the rest?
Here's the thing, to give you a little context. So I kind of came into being a film critic, and if you want, I can expand on the story at some point, but I came into being a film critic. Being a film critic, when you're a filmmaker, sort of like being undercover. You're like, okay, these are the people who judge me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I like to say I have a three-pronged approach as a film critic. I'm a filmmaker, so I often see things that a film critic may not see. In terms of structure, in terms of pacing, in terms of, okay, I see what he did here. Oh, a fractured narrative. Oh, you know, all these things that as a screenwriter, I learned in terms of writing screenplays. So I think I have definitely a filmmaker's perspective seeing a film. And any if most of your listeners are filmmakers, then they know what I'm talking about. The other perspective is that I'm a film lover. So before I became a film critic or a filmmaker, I love film. But then when you become a film critic, it's a very interesting situation because, okay, I'm a unicorn in that I'm a filmmaker who became a film critic, but then I'm a double unicorn because I'm Black, I'm African-American. So, and though in the last 5 years, we've seen, you know, a huge increase in Black film critics. But when I started doing this in 2001, 2002, there were very few of us. And whenever we saw each other, it was like, huh. So I've always approached as, like I said, film lover, film critic, filmmaker, and then also being Black. So I love science fiction, for instance, but it was always clear to me certain tropes, even though we're in another age of Afrofuturism, but if you liked any films made in the 20th century that were science fiction, you know, there's certain commonalities about the Black characters that, let's just say, pissed off everybody. But going further, there's this consciousness or awareness or context of representation. So though I love Woody Allen, for instance, I was very conscious that there were no Black people in his films. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think I went into this being unique to begin with.
How did you gain a following and credibility as a film critic?
Well, when I started, okay, my situation was that I was already doing radio at WBAI. A short story from my life to give a little bit of context, because there's a lot of irony in my life. So I started out as a filmmaker, like I said, but I grew up listening to the radio. I grew up listening to a film critic at WBAI. His name was Paul Wonder. And when I say grew up listening, I was an avid fan. I used to listen all the time. When I got older and I ended up being at WBAI, and I came there as a sidebar to do radio drama, and then ended up getting on my own show, and I was doing what I was doing, and I was involved with the arts and doing all kinds of things. I loved film, but they already had a film critic, and he was my idol, and I got to meet him, and, you know, we became friends, I guess, on the show, and then he even interviewed me about my first film when that came out. But then, not too long after that, he passed. And the station asked me to take over the show. So I ended up then taking over being the film critic at WBAI because everybody there knew me. They knew I was a his name is Paul Wonder. I was a big Paul Wonder fan. You know, he'd take me to screenings every now and then, but he was very possessive of his position. But I ended up taking over the show that I grew up listening to. So that's, you know, a little bit ironic. But when I started in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, major market radio, New York radio, that was, you held power. So I, not only did I inherit the listeners and whatnot, but the studios embraced me very, very easily, because I was replacing, you know, Paul Wonder was a oft quoted critic. His quotes were on all the ads you saw in the newspapers and on TV and whatnot. And so when I stepped into that slot, they treated me very well. And so if you look at a lot of movies from 2001 to, let's say, 2010, there are a lot of movies that I was quoted on. I gained credibility pretty quickly because I was in major market radio. But then, like anything else, you know, it's about relationships, you know. So from 2001 to, let's say, 2011, radio mattered. Mm-hmm. Later on, that's a different story.
How do you think your career as a filmmaker gave you leverage in being a good critic?
Well, here's the thing, okay, and not to disparage my fellow film critics. one thing that happened is, and I say to 2001 to 2011, what happened is internet happened, online happened. And when online first came along, you know, when you go to a junket, and for those who don't know, a junket is like a, you know, a series of press days for a film. The bigger the film, the bigger the junket, where they, you know, they bring in journalists, local, internationally, they fly them in, they put them up in the hotel, they put the all the cast and producers and director and whatever, whoever's there to do promotion for the film. And then you get to interview them, and they break you into groups. You know, your TV, which of course was always top tier. Then there's radio, which was a very specific thing. And then there was print. Okay. When online came along, it was sort of like a bastard stepchild. They'd stick him in with radio sometimes. They'd stick him in with print sometimes. They didn't really know what to do with online. It didn't really matter. That's in the beginning. But as online became what it is today, and it became, well, this is not local, this is global, potentially, this is everywhere. And all the, you know, we've watched what's happened in the digital age in terms of being an online critic. A couple of things happened. The good part of it is that online kind of leveled the playing field, where, you know, there are only a few film critics out there, and we won't even get into race yet. But what online allowed is anybody with an opinion and a computer could become a film critic. Mm-hmm. The bad part about it is that anybody with an opinion and a computer could be a film critic. So what that meant, in my opinion, is it kind of, while it leveled the playing field, it lowered the standard. A lot of film critics, let's put it this way, I doubt that we'll ever see anybody win a Pulitzer Prize for film criticism like Roger Ebert did, because film criticism is not quite so literary and intellectual as it once was. So what happened was, you'll have a lot of people who have an issue with a certain actor or actress or director, and their whole review will be trashing that person they don't like, not very giving much perspective. But the other thing that happened is, now you had an influx of tons and tons of people, and let's be honest, tons and tons of white folks, okay, who became film critics. And another thing happened is that, again, I won't get into the race of it, but what opportunities were there for you? You kind of had to make your own opportunity if you're a person of color in that scene. And as online got bigger, radio became less relevant. This is pre-podcast. Podcast now is really, in my opinion, just radio to go. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening, I think, again, just to make sure I'm answering your question, is that the landscape changed. And so to maintain relevancy, there were certain things I had to do. And, you know, one of them was creating some of the organizations that I did, co-founding AFCA, the African American Film Critics Association and the Black Film Critics Circle. And the reason we did that is because there are all these critics groups, but there wasn't one for Black folk.
What is the African American Film Critics Association? What is your goal, your mission?
Well, I am no longer part of the African American Film Critics Association. That is now Gil Roberts. I won't go into the story as to why I had to leave necessarily. It's available. You can find out on Wikipedia. But let's just say the goal of the African American Film Critics Association and the Black Film Critics Circle share a common goal, which is to amplify the voices of film critics of color, specifically Black, specifically African American, and let the industry, you know, as they say now, that our opinion matters. Because, you know, there are a lot of films, you know, you guys, I'm sure, are film lovers. There are a lot of films over the years that should have gotten a lot more acclaim, should have gotten a lot more acknowledgement, should have gotten a lot more play, but didn't because they were a Black film, or films that got critically drubbed because most of the critics didn't really understand its significance or dismissed it, you know, culturally. It didn't mean anything to them.
Right.
So those were the reasons. You know, today we have what you call influencers, okay? But that's what a critic is. So if a critic is an influencer, and if the films are made and financed by mostly white males, and then they're reviewed by mostly white males, it's sort of like a closed circuit. It's of course they're going to always praise itself. Of course the Black character is always going to die in the science fiction. Of course, you know, there's certain things that will never change. So it was about amplifying those voices, advocating for change, and showing that, you know, yeah, what we have to say matters.
What's your approach when reviewing a project? Like, you know, do you have to watch it a certain amount of times? Are you looking for like certain elements of the film?
If I had to watch a film more than once, that like I'd have no life at all. No. No. Well, you know, my approach to watching a film is okay. First of all, one other thing that's changed, and I understand the industry, is that trailers give away so much. It's like by the time you've seen the whole movie in the trailer. So as a film critic, as a rule, I try to never watch trailers. I try to never read the synopsis, okay? And I just watch the movie. And for me, part of my approach is I'm a storyteller. So I want to respect that storyteller. Okay, you got a story to tell. I have no idea what even the genre is. Tell me the story. And I let them tell me. And I have to say, it's the most enjoyable way. I would tell this to your listeners. It's the most enjoyable way to watch a film. Pick any film. Don't read anything on it. Don't watch a trailer. Just if it's even the title, if you just think you want to just watch a film, having no idea, it's a very different thing. And for me as a film critic, I hate sitting there watching a movie, waiting for what I don't know is going to happen to start happening. Okay. So, and if you see a lot of movies like I do, and which again, I think any film lover does, you kind of, you know, even if I weren't a film maker and I didn't know all of the, you know, yes, we're entering. Okay. This is the second act. Okay. That's plot point. Okay. Yeah. Now we're at the, you know, even if I didn't know all those things and those things were just, you know, instinctive to me from having seen lots of movies and I know you guys know what I'm talking about, that I still want to be surprised. I'm a very big proponent of storytelling, you know, whether it's book, movie, poem, play, you know, a story has its own universe and you got to pull me in, you know, pull me in. The first time I ever did it actually was before I was really a film critic. I went to see this movie called The Lost Boys and it was like a promo screening. I had no idea what it was about. And as I watched the movie, when it turned out that it was about vampires, it blew my mind. I had no idea. And now, not that that's a great movie or anything, but the pleasure I got out of going, oh, they're vampires. I never would have gotten that if I had seen the trailers and knew everything. And so when I watch a film, I'm looking at all the elements, pacing, storytelling, characters. I have my preferences, you know, not only genre, but in terms of story. I like a story that's a small story that has larger implications. I like the idea of, you know, digging a hole and then filling it, you know, like keep me engaged, keep me guessing. You know, I don't have a problem with long movies. I don't have a problem with long form storytelling. I don't have a problem with a movie that's quote unquote slow, but it better be a good story. So I'm always open to being in the hands of a storyteller as a filmmaker or a filmmaker, but the things that make a film, you know, that take me out of a film, you know, I'll use Antebellum as an example. Great premise, loved it. Okay, bring me in. You brought me in, but then by the third act, it starts to become a B movie, and instead of Twilight Zone, it becomes like M. Night Shyamalan, and you know, it was disappointing because it didn't fulfill its promise as a story. Mm-hmm. Now, I only use that as an example. Now, I'm not trashing the film. I'm glad it got made, and I think they're, you know, don't even get me going about Black filmmakers and how important it is and for us to tell our stories, all that, you know, you'll have to say, Mike, enough. Mm-hmm. But I do think that as a film critic, when I watch a film, you've got my attention. You need to be saying something. So there are certain filmmakers, even if I don't like the film, I respect the fact that they're saying something, you know, like Spike Lee. I may not love every Spike Lee film, but Spike Lee's always got something to say. And I completely respect somebody that's got something to say as an artist. And so I hope you have something to say. So I judge it based on, you know, you've got my attention. You know, sure, are there movies that are just for the sake of movies? Yeah, but it's rare that those movies are great movies.
How many movies do you watch in, like, I don't know, like a month?
Please. Okay, let's say I watch on an average between 4 to 7 movies a week.
Really?
Yes. The bad thing about being a film critic is that there's so many movies you have to watch that it's rare that you get time to watch what you want to watch. Especially now that TV's so good. I mean, there's so much good on TV. It's like, wow. And I don't get to see a lot of it because I'm really busy watching movies. And then once you watch a movie, you still got to do your review, or, you know, I have to be aware of everything that's going on in the industry because I could be called at any time. Like, Mike, we need you to talk about the fact that, you know, this happened, you know. So I being a film critic, it's definitely a job. But seeing a movies, it, you know, I love the fact that my job is to watch movies, but at the same time, on average, 5 a week, I see at least 20 movies a month. So that's, let's see, times 10, that's 200 movies. That's like 240 movies a year, practically.
Nice.
Wow, I've never done the math.
How long does it take for you to write up a review?
I mean, I used to write reviews for a few different sites, and I'm more prone to do a think piece now than a review. But I have 2 podcasts and 2 radio shows that I do. I do one radio show. One podcast is called Too Fast, Two Films. I do that with Jackson Murphy. And the concept behind that show is that, you know, we do 2 films in like 5 minutes. You know, we each give our review. So I have to have my notes, my talking points. Then I also do my other film review show is called Real World, which is on WBAI. And of course, I have to give a self plug there. And it's on 6:30 p.m. EST, WBAI.org. You can listen to a stream. It's called Real World. And that's a half hour. Now, depending on the amount of films that I'm covering, you know, I try to cover at least 4, sometimes more, but sometimes I may just do 3 and I have an interview. So an interview with, you know, whoever, Lou Gossett Jr. or whoever it is. And so it's more about preparing. You know, when I do TV, I used to have my own TV show on Arise Network, which, you know, ironically, even though it started in 2014, 2015, was the first African-American hosted film review show ever, which is ridiculous. But I had to just prepare because I wasn't reading a prompter. I had to be prepared to talk about it. So the way I work is I'll watch a film. I don't know anything about it. I watch a film. Then after I've watched it, I go back and then I do all my research. I read all the press notes. I read, you know, other reviews. I want to see, you know, what other people are thinking, you know, and that's a big part of it. And I think that comes from, again, that 3-prong approach. if I'm reviewing a film, let's say it's a film by a woman, you know, seeing films that are written and directed by women always feel different. They always feel different because a woman, doesn't matter her race, will always have aspects of character, of plot, of emotional connection. Just their way of telling a story is just different. It's a different lens. And even if they take the same material, you know, you watch a movie like Little versus a movie like Big, it's just a different perspective. It's a different perspective on being in a society. And again, that comes from me being a science fiction fan. I'm, you know, it's all humans, what they do. So I will then read what women are saying about the film. Then I will read what men are saying about the film. Then I'll read maybe, you know, what the white critics versus black critics. So I like to get everything about the film, you know, read up on it, maybe read an interview or something. But then I also like to read what other critics are saying, you know, depending on how early I've seen the film, just to get a sense of where it's going to land, you know, because the other thing about being a film critic, you also gain this perspective. As a filmmaker, it's invaluable, but it gives you a perspective on marketing, on audience reaction, on how it's going to be received. I have all this perspective that I have being who I am and having done it for a minute now. So to answer your question, it takes me, you know, there's the 2 hours of the film, let's say, then there's at least another hour of prep, at least. When I write a review, I usually will write, you know, right after I've seen it and then come back and see, you know, see what I've written and see what I want to add. You know, I've definitely had the experience of seeing a film at a junket. You know, let's say they have a junket, what they call a junket screening on a Friday. And then I'm going to go to the press conference on Saturday. And then maybe Saturday afternoon, I have a one-on-one with the director. And I've definitely had the experience of seeing the film, thinking, oh, and then hearing the going to the press conference, they're going, oh, all right, I see what they're going for. And then talking to the director and going, wow, okay, now I see what he was going for. So I have a very different perspective. So I'll grade it differently. So there's always a couple hours, whether it's a couple hours of seeing the film, but then there's at least a couple hours, I'd say, for any review. Now I'm realizing, like, there goes my life. But yes. So I try to do that. I try to do that. But there have been times where I don't have a lot of time. And, you know, instinct takes over. And I have to get it out or do my interview or whatever.
Have you critiqued or reviewed a film and maybe had more of a critical perspective and then, like, later on changed your point of view on it?
Yes and no, probably less now than when I began, because, you know, the danger of sometimes, and again, this is just an inherent danger that of any film critic, you know, you think about any film that you've seen, you didn't like, you know, and film critics, believe it or not, are humans too. So you think about any film that you've seen and you liked it a lot. And then you thought about it and you're like, that's fucked up. That, you know what? I thought that was good, but that's kind of fucked up. No. So that happens. You know, I definitely could say there are films where I didn't like it, but then reading or you know, seeing, I'll give you a good example. I saw this movie with Hugh Jackman played P.T. Barnum, and I would have given it an okay review. Then I read up on P.T. Barnum. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck this movie. Because P.T. Barnum did so much more than create a freaking circus. That's the least of his achievements, okay? He was an advocate for civil rights. He did this, he did that. He was an abolitionist. He was all these things that had nothing to do. I even felt that way, I'll be honest, about Harriet. Mm. I liked Harriet, but...
Really?
No, I liked Harriet, okay? But, okay, seeing someone freeing slaves, that's great, it's empowering, I loved it, okay, great. But Harriet was an undercover spy in the Civil War? I want to see that movie, okay? That, I've never seen anything like that. That I want to see. So context sometimes can change my opinion of just how valid or significant pieces. Yes, I did like it, but compared to, you know, I felt like, okay, that would be a good setup for the series, and then she's going to be a spy for the next season. That would be more, I'd be more excited about that, because that's such another dimension of being Black, of being a woman, of, in the context of what was going on in this country. I mean,
can't always hit the mark every time.
No, and I take nothing away from Harriet. I mean, just, you know, believe me, I love the movie, but I still feel like, wow, like, okay, I want to see Harriet the spy. That's what I really want to see.
Yeah, understandable.
What makes a good film critic?
Okay, now you're asking those Mike Sargent questions. Okay, that's kind of crescent I would ask a filmmaker. I have three questions I ask every filmmaker, and that's almost one of them. But what I think makes a good film review, or a good film critic, or do a good film review?
The critic.
I think what makes a good film critic, okay, and again, not to disparage my brothers and sisters who are critics, but a lot of them, you know, they just kind of, they like the movies, they happen into it. Far too many people have no real knowledge of film. I think what makes a good film critic is someone who understands the form. I think you should take filmmaking or have a knowledge of filmmaking to be a film critic. I honestly do. Because I think you should have an understanding of the mechanics. You know, I think, yes, should you just viscerally, like, was it good? Was it good? Did you like the characters? Did you not? Yes. But I also think you should also have an understanding enough of, have education enough. Also, you know, if you don't have a good enough knowledge of film and you see something, you think, well, that's great. You realize, oh, that's a complete ripoff of XYZ, but you didn't even know about XYZ. So I think a film critic is someone who should be educated about film. A film critic is still a journalist, you know, and I could say for myself, the skills that translated best for me from being a filmmaker to be a film critic is just that journalistic nature. I think every writer, in my opinion, is sort of a pseudo-psychologist, you know. You got to understand people to make them up. But research, if both of you are writers, then, you know, sometimes the greatest joy of a script, not just coming to the plot and the character, but all the research you have to do to make the world real. And so I think that same thing as a journalist, you know, if I'm going to review a film, I need to know the context. If it's a historical thing, I need to know some aspect. I can judge it. Yes, is it historically accurate? That's one perspective. But the other thing is, does it tell the story? Does it engage me? Does it bring the message of whatever this person stood for, blah, blah, blah. So I think a good film critic should be a good journalist. They should be a good writer. When you read a really good review, you're like, wow, you know, you feel like you're having a conversation, they're talking to you. So that person should be able to have a unique voice and a perspective, but an informed perspective, some knowledge of film. I mean, you know, there are definitely classic films that I've never seen, but I do consider myself to be not a film historian, but I definitely know a lot about film. And it's interesting because I asked once, I interviewed Francis Ford Coppola, which is one of the great things about being a film critic. You get to interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, wow, when could I say I got to sit with Francis Ford Coppola for 45 minutes to talk about film? You know, that's like film school to me. So I've learned a lot. I don't care about talking to the actors, quite honestly, even though I talk to, I always want to talk to the writer, director, producer. Yeah. Those are the people I want to talk to because I'm a filmmaker. But I asked him, you know, what do you think the relationship is between a film critic and a filmmaker? In short, he said they should make each other better. You know, the film critic should be able to give a perspective and objectivity that the filmmaker should be able to use. And at the same time, filmmaker should be also opening the mind of, you know, the film critic. So that relationship, I think if some writer director has put their life's blood into some film, you guys know filmmakers, and you're filmmakers yourself. Like, you could have a short could take you 3 years to do, you know, and then have somebody just dismiss it, not even really having even any concept of what you've done. Not only is it disheartening, but I think it's unfair. So I think a film critic has to bring something to the table. you have to bring an informed opinion. You can't just have an opinion because you don't, you know, you don't like such and such an actor.
When you say a film critic should know film, what elements of film are you referring to?
One thing, and this is a slight sidebar to give context to my answer. When you just see a lot of commercial films, your basic film, you know, three act structure, protagonist, antagonist, you know, beginning, middle, end, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's not the only way to tell a story. The real question is, for me, I think I judge, you know, the storytelling, you know, whether it's the script, you know, because if you have a really bad script, you know, crappy dialogue, and it takes you out of the movie, you're like, nobody talks like that. Or if you have really bad acting as a director, you know, it's not a cliche, you know, that casting is everything, but it's still your film. You still, I could tell you stories of making a film and not getting the performance I want, but I had to get it in little tiny pieces to put it together to be what I needed it to be. So you want to see direction, story, screenwriting, cinematography, you know, if cinematography and editing, I kind of put together. If you see an action film and you're watching it and you're like, what the hell just happened? The editing and the way it was shot was just, I'm not even sure who the bad guys are, you know? And we've all seen those kind of films. And again, that kind of comes back to the director. So, you know, those six elements, I would say script / story. Okay. And the reason I say / story, because like you said, it doesn't have to be traditional, but okay, you can have a film with the first 45 minutes, nobody talks. So visually, is it interesting? Are you telling me a story in the frame? Are you conveying your idea? You know, I've seen films where, you know, I love the film. Wow, the atmosphere and this and that. But at the end, I was confused. I really didn't know what happened. And I don't consider myself to be stupid. So I was paying attention. But if you haven't been able to make clear what you're saying, sure. Can you have an ambiguous ending? And can you have like a giant baby floating in space and everybody should interpret it? Yeah. But if you have an ending that makes the experience satisfying, I think that helps the film. I'm sure you all can name films that are a great film, terrible ending. Mm-hmm. So maybe the ending shouldn't be necessarily, but I would say, yeah, story, script, directing, cinematography, conclusion. I think conclusion is important. You know, a great ending. Do you agree? I mean, how do you guys feel? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it has to be unpredictable. And it does. I don't really care what genre it is. It could be a screwball comedy, which I love. If I know exactly what is going to be said next, maybe the story doesn't matter so much if it's a screwball comedy. Like, I'm not that engaged into the story. But if I know what joke is going to be said next or what they're going to say next.
Right. Or when you see the joke coming a mile away, yeah, it's like, yeah. Okay. They only put this character because, you know, at some point they're going to say blah, blah, blah to use that character's name.
I think for me, seeing the character go on a journey is important. You know, I need to feel like I'm watching someone navigate an issue or a situation that I can personally relate to. And there's some sort of growth or shift or something happening.
Because then it's worth your time.
Exactly, because I feel like I'm going to take, there's a takeaway for me. I'm going to learn something.
Right, you're investing. Yeah. You want to return.
So you had just mentioned there's different elements to film that can make the movie exceptional. Can you give us an example of a movie that breaks the traditional three-act structure, but you found to be, you know, really compelling and why you thought it was compelling?
That's interesting. That breaks the three-act structure. Well, breaking the three-act structure, I have to think a little bit. But I will say, for instance, a movie like Get Out, okay, which I think is a perfect example. What I there are a lot of things that I think Get Out did that made it so iconic. Not just about what it was about, but the fact that horror is not a genre. I think Get Out and Black Panther are two good examples of films where, you know, probably Get Out more than Black Panther, but maybe not, where, you know, what they do is not something you've never seen before in terms of genre, but what they do in the genre you've never seen before. And for me, a film like Get Out, we've seen all kinds of horror. We've seen women being terrorized forever in horror films. We've seen that. We've seen the psycho killer. We've seen the supernatural killer. We've seen the, you know, the alien, you know, killer, invasion, villain, antagonist. But the opening of Get Out has a scene where the, you know, not the main character, but we see a black character go into a neighborhood that he doesn't know, that's clearly a white neighborhood, and then get stalked by someone white. And that fear of what will this crazy white person do? What does this crazy white person want? Is something every single black person, I think, can relate to. Okay. And that's just a fear that we've never seen really properly represented on screen, not in the horror genre. We've definitely seen films where, you know, black folks have awful things happen to them, but not in a genre where it really was presented as, just like we've seen a million, girl is wearing a short skirt, she just got out of the club, she's a little drunk, and there's someone following her. That's scary. We've seen that. Not that to diminish the horror of that, but we've never seen something like this. And all of the notes that he hits in the film about, you know, race and interracial romance and you know, all the things that Get Out is about, is a film to me that it definitely it transformed the genre. And we're seeing now in the last 3 years, we've seen more black horror films than we had seen in the previous 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, and what it did is, for me, horror and science fiction, but horror and comedy specifically, really, horror and comedy have a relationship with science fiction, horror, comedy. The thing that they all have in common is that they have the ability, specifically, I think, science fiction and comedy, but horror definitely, you've forgotten that it could do this, but it has the ability to speak about the human condition without being heavy-handed. And a drama, you could have any drama about this and that and civil rights or you know, sexual politics. You can have those things, you know, injustice. But science fiction can speak about this in a way that, you know, everybody gets it, but they're still enjoying it. They're still digesting it. They're not taking offense. They're not taking a side, as we are so divided in this country. And that's what science fiction can do. And horror specifically is a genre that we've forgotten could have anything to say about anything. Mm-hmm. Because it had become this genre of, you know, there's the slasher film, there's the psycho killer film, there's the serial killer, there's the monster, there's the supernatural, there's the demon coming after. You know, you'd forgotten that it could be anything other than scary. You'd forgotten that. And again, coming back to storytelling and coming back to me being a science fiction fan, every culture has something to say about the human condition. And if people of color, you know, all these genres that have been created to speak about the human condition. I mean, let's face it. If you talk to George Romero about Night of the Living Dead, they weren't zombies. They were ghouls. They were something that represented something. He was making a political statement. Okay. Now, that may have ushered in zombie movies. There's been a million zombie movies. We've got zombie TV series and all that stuff now. And it doesn't really necessarily have, maybe in the story, they can work in some political things, but it's not something that you look to. You don't go, wow, that horror movie had a lot to say about race relations. It's not even something that would have ever come out of your mouth until Get Out.
Yeah.
And so, again, now, even I just saw a recent remake of a movie I always liked called The Witches, with Octavia Spencer. And I don't know if you know the plot of The Witches. The Witches is this story, great story about this kid who goes on vacation with his grandmother, and happens to at this hotel where they're, you know, by the water, there's a coven of witches are having like their annual meeting, and witches hate children. And when they catch him, as he kind of inadvertently stumbled into this meeting, they turn him into a mouse. And it's a kid's movie. And I always loved the movie because it had Angelica Houston and she gives a fantastic performance. But now they've updated it. And now they made the kid black. And Chris Rock is doing the narration. And Octavia Spencer is the grandmother. And my first reaction was like, ah, okay. All right, now they're blackifying the witches. Okay. What about, you know, it's like, but 10 minutes in, it starts to get good. It starts to get really good. And you realize, okay, they actually said, okay, we're going to tell this story through a different lens. And now all the stuff about witches and witchcraft and spells and potions, that's steeped in black culture too. But it's a different lens, a different perspective. And when it starts to happen, you go, wow. And you realize, again, why it's so important to have in a genre. And again, this is like, you know, scary kids movie, but still there's so much being said. There's a lot of things being said in that movie. I don't want to give it away for those who haven't seen it. That's the other thing. A good film critic and a good film review doesn't tell you the entire film. Just wanted to say that.
Put that out there. Okay. We'll let them know.
Yeah, just want to, you know, you could put echo on that if you want. But I say all that to say, yes, Get Out is a good example to me of because we're allowing a different lens to tell these stories. You know, it doesn't necessarily break the three-act structure, but it definitely advances the form and reminds you of what you can do in the genre.
Is there a particular type of film you'd like to see, at least in this, I guess, generation or era of film?
Well, you know, I'll be honest, I think I'm seeing it. I mean, you know, I'm a big science fiction person, so, and I consider myself to be a pioneering Afrofuturist. And so I am happy to see, you know, and before when I was mentioning Get Out and Black Panther, what Black Panther did, okay, and which is what I've wanted to see. I've always been into science fiction, and I love science fiction because of, again, the possibilities. You know, I like all the fantasy elements and whatnot as well, but more importantly, I like the what if idea. And any good science fiction, anything that stood the test of time, takes a good what if, a premise, and puts it out there, and then like, okay, if this were the case, what would human beings do? You know, whether it's superheroes or whether it's, you know, special powers, or whether it's aliens visiting us or humans on another planet, any of those things, that's always what it is. What would human beings, what we know of humans, what would they do in this scenario? So for me, what I want to see, and I'm just beginning to see, I'm a fan of, you know, Octavia Butler, and, you know, I knew Octavia, you know, and, you know, there was a time that you could count on one hand the amount of science fiction writers out there, but now, there are tons of them, and it's not black science fiction, it's Afrofuturism. So what worked about Black Panther, I think, was that's not the best superhero movie, but seeing what we saw, and here's the core concept of Black Panther. Imagine that there's a place on Earth that has not been colonized. Boom. That's such a outrageous, you've never seen it before in 110 years of making science fiction films, that like you're like, wow. And all of the everything that was beautiful about Black Panther, everything that it did to embrace black culture, was just, it was a landmark. There's a reason why it made more than any single superhero film. And there's a reason why, not just here, because as you know, for a long time, black films lived or died domestically, because quote unquote, black films don't travel. So not only did it open the doors, but it also showed that, yeah, you know, we're hungry for, we being the rest of the planet, is hungry for stories. You know, black lives do matter. Black stories do matter. They are, they do have something to say. It is interesting. There are lots of monocultures on this planet, you know, that may be resistant to black stories. But for me, I black science fiction, Afrofuturism, and the idea that we can, we're seeing what we're seeing now, where we're seeing so many films that are not just a genre. They're just stories where characters happen to be black. But I don't so much, I like stories where it never comes up, but I also like more, even more stories where that context is given. I think that when you've got the attention of people who don't understand, one of the most wonderful things about films is, especially if you enjoy foreign films, but just films in general, you know, is that you get a chance to live another life, see the world through somebody else's eyes, you know. And there are many examples of great films where you spend 2 hours or so just looking at the world through the lens of these characters. Does that make
sense? Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Totally.
How do you feel about the state of black cinema in 2020?
This is the best time it's ever been for black cinema. I hope it gets better. There's never been a better time to be a black filmmaker ever. This is it. Like every week, all summer long, you were reading another entertainment company, another media company is putting a black person in charge. Black women. My opinion is the future is completely, it is definitely female. And I think, you know, there's a reason why the countries that have dealt with the pandemic have been led by women. I think there's a reason why. But I think that this is the best possible time. You know, now, you know, the one thing social media has done is and again, I see, as having lived a very ironic life, I see a lot of irony in life. The irony is that while we're in this time where, you know, in many ways, we're more divided than ever before, and there are more civil rights, you know, our democracy is in danger. Everything they're doing, the voter suppression, all those things, it's all coming to bear. But during that same period, is the age of social media. And social media has, in a way, become its own democracy, where, you know, they can gerrymander a voting district and turn it into this and you know, the you know, vote in people who shouldn't get voted in and pass laws that the majority don't want, and they don't have to worry about constituents, you know. And there's a great documentary about this called Slay the Dragon. I highly recommend everybody see. But at the same time, social media gives this accountability. So the only reason I think that we are, you know, since George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that, and all the changes that have happened in Hollywood, all the firings of people who you know, said this racial thing or turned out to be a Karen and were caught on video, that's all happening because of social media. That's people reacting. That's the power of the people, the power of all the people that view it, see it, that would not buy from this company or support this film or whatever it is. We would never have seen all these changes socially happening, even during a time, you know, let's just say with, you know, a ridiculously fascist regime going on in this country, social media is still hugely powerful, okay? And as a result, I think it's given us an opportunity now or open the doors where companies now, it's one thing to, you know, black out your social media and put Black Lives Matter or whatever it is. It's another thing to hire people from within. So I think the Black Lives Matter movement has changed things. I think the pandemic has forced, besides all of that going on, the only winner here during this pandemic from a media standpoint is Netflix. You know, all the other companies have had to become streaming, you know, besides, you know, the Apples and the Amazons and Disney now, as you know, they're all going to have streaming platforms. what Netflix has shown is, oh, well, this underserved audience, we'll make movies and TV shows for them. That underserved audience, we'll make movies and TV shows for them. So all the stuff that we're seeing coming out of Netflix, all the stuff we're getting to see by all these great filmmakers, black filmmakers from Netflix who have all these deals and whatnot, all the other studios are having to imitate it. So Hollywood always follows the money. Now that money is being made and that there's a hunger for black stories about and by people of color, look what happened with The Watchmen. Look what happened with The Watchmen. What did it get, like 18 Emmy nominations? That's unheard of, okay? On a show with a black female lead that's a science fiction about injustice and racism. I mean, it's mind-blowing, but it also has completely changed the landscape. So in the next 2-3 years, I think we're going to see some of the best black films we've ever seen. Mm. I'm optimistic.
You explain to the listeners how a film can be bashed by critics. Like, I can go to Metacritic.com or Rotten Tomatoes, and it has the worst reviews, but the people love the film.
Reggie, that's a great question. All right, so here's my take on that. Okay, and again, this is my take. First of all, if you go to Metacritic or you go to Rotten Tomatoes, you will see a disparity often. Okay. More often than not, where, you know, critics loved it, audiences hated it. Audience loved it, critics hated it. Okay, part of that is that I think being a film critic, okay, it changes you. Okay, I think depending on how long you do it, okay. On one hand, like I said, I think the bar has been lowered, so you got a lot of opinionated people that, you know, let's just say their opinions shouldn't matter as much as they do. Okay, we could say that about a lot of things. But I think the other thing is, when you're a film critic, there's a tendency to become a little jaded. I think a lot of film critics kind of forget why they became film critics. Like, it's rare you're going to meet a film critic says, oh, I became a film critic because of the foreign films I saw, or the blah, 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 blah. No, they became a film critic because I saw Star Wars 82 times when I was a kid, or I this movie, or I used to religiously watch it. There was some commercial piece of filmmaking that they loved, and that's what made them fall in love with movies. Okay. But what happens then is, and it's a two-sided thing. You know, you see a lot of movies, so certain movies just, they become like, you've just seen this too much, and you've seen this same type of story told better. So your objectivity and the context in which you view it is different, you know, even if you're not, you know, now erudite. But the other thing is, I think one of the things I missed most about being a film critic, okay, besides, you know, getting to watch more things that I want to watch, is that I don't get to see a movie with the intended audience. A film critic audience is like their arms are folded, you know, in front of them. It's sort of like, okay, impress me. Okay. Whereas a regular audience, they got a box of popcorn, or they're like, okay, thrill me. So you go into it with a different expectation. You go into it with a different, you're there to enjoy it, not there to critique it. You know, and yes, there is something to say that everybody's a film critic because everybody has an opinion. But at the same time, when you're going into a movie, it's like anything in life. What are you bringing when you go in? You know, if you're coming in looking to criticize, I'll never forget a film critic I knew said to me, I went to see this movie with Jamie Foxx, Tom Cruise. I can't remember what it was called. It was years ago. And after we got out of the film, you know, we're at the junket, and he says to me, Tom Cruise, he's just a haircut. And I'm like, what the hell is that even? What does that even mean? You know? And so, but, you know, okay, if your belief is Tom Cruise is just a haircut, then okay, then that means you got some issues with Tom Cruise. You know, so you go into the movie. Now, That's not to say there aren't tons of people who said, look, I saw Tom jumping on that couch and like, no, I can't get with him. Okay. But if you're a critic and you come in with that attitude. Now, let me also say, okay, I don't know how many film critics are going to hear this. Film critics are sort of like film geeks gone legit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I am someone who used to go to science fiction conventions a lot in my youth. Okay. And science fiction conventions, they're not like they are today. 80s, 90s, science fiction conventions were a place where there were lots of what I would call social invalids, okay? People who were not necessarily, you know, they weren't, you know, the guys weren't the coolest, the women weren't the most attractive. Let's put it like that. Okay? All right? And so that was science fiction conventions. But in the science fiction, that arena, they are in their element. They're wearing, they're dressed like whoever. And this guy is like Darth Vader with a pot belly and nobody cares. It's a science fiction convention. Film critics are very similar. When I first started going, I'm like, wow, they're not the cool crowd. Okay. Now, within, are there cliques within? Sure. Are there the quote unquote cool crowd within film critics? Absolutely. It's, and trust me, like any other group, it's a community, but it's much, much more like science fiction. So these are not folks, let's just say, in my opinion, that are going to have the views of the average person. They're a little bit, I think, social outcasts often. And I also think part of the reason they love to tell the entire story in a review is because they're frustrated storytellers. That's my opinion. I think that the film critic and the film viewer are very different type of person. And I think the film critic comes into a film looking to criticize. I think the film lover comes into a film looking to enjoy themselves. And I think sometimes the film critic may go, oh, it's this, it's that, and the cinematography and the meaning behind it. And the audience is like, I fell asleep through the first 20 minutes of this film. There's a disparity, I think, because it's a very different. I think film critics, film audiences are just very different.
So how does one, you know, become a film critic, whether that's on a show or for a magazine or a newspaper?
I mean, today, you know, back in the day would have been a different thing. Okay, but today, if you want to be a film critic, you literally could start a blog. The other thing about the internet, the good and the bad is, like I said, anybody with an opinion and a computer can be a film critic. You know, there are screenings now for mommy bloggers, okay? You know, so whatever your opinion is, and there are a number of film critics I've known who just, they just love film and they just want to write about it. And they know how to write. And, you know, some of them are still in college and they've got followings already, but they're doing it. So you have to be willing to do the work. You have to be willing to do the work, to read, to write, to watch the films. Reviewing films, you know, without having to seeing them as press, that, you know, now you could review Netflix. You could, you know, you could find a niche for yourself if you want to be a film critic, whatever, whoever you are, whatever your perspective is. If you have something clever, something worthwhile to say, if Londe said, I want to be a film critic, what should I do? I'd say, all right, well, I would say start your own site, come up with a title. Maybe you want to call yourself Film Londe. Okay. And then now Film Londe, and there it is. That's your thing. You're going to brand yourself as this. So have an idea of what your brand is, and maybe you're going to choose certain, you're going to review everything, or maybe you're only going to review a certain kind of film, or maybe you're always going to come from a certain perspective, you know? So if I would say, start writing your reviews, start posting them. You could have a blog site. Everybody's got social media, so you could put them on your social media, you know, creating a site. You could, plenty of free sites. You could have a Wix site, doesn't matter. But I would say come up with an idea of how you want to position yourself in the market, and start writing, start reviewing. You could do something where you only review old films, and that's your thing. You only review, you know, movies that were made from video games, and that's your thing. Whatever you think you know the most about in terms of film, play to your strength. So if, you know, if she was, I would ask Londe, I would say, so what, you know, what are your favorite kinds of films? What's your favorite genre? What do you feel you have the most to say? What do you feel is missing in the marketplace? What do you not hear enough of? And she may say, well, I don't hear enough of, you know, XYZ. I don't hear enough of, you know, women who have come from another planet reviewing films like I do. So, you know, that's it. So you're going to have your interplanetary film reviews because of who you are. If you're reviewing films, you're going to talk about things. What do you like to read, and what do you feel there's not enough of? Because if you're just going to review comic book films, okay, what are you going to bring to that?
You know, there's a lot of folks on YouTube and they get a lot of views. Has that affected what you do in any way?
Well, it has in the sense of relevance. You know, I'm respected in the industry, but I don't have as large a following as some people. Here's the other thing about being a film critic. You know, being a film critic is not exactly the most lucrative thing in the world. Okay, sure. Can you build a following? But again, those guys or those people you see on YouTube, they didn't just like put up their first video and get 18,000 views. They had to keep doing it, you know, till they finally get it. And you also have to see what's out there. You have to follow trends. Like if everybody's talking about, you know, they do a new casting for Black Panther 2, okay, or they announce a casting for Black Panther 2 and they're going to pick somebody else. And you say, okay, I'm going to do a post on YouTube with the five actors I think are be the most. And again, you want to be aware of what's out there. You want to put up, you know, find the hashtags that are trending. You're going to, you know, you're going to capitalize on whatever it is at the moment, but you have to be aware of what's going on. That may bring you in your first views during a time where everybody's searching for, you know, Black Panther 2 casting, but then you have to build on that, and you have to be able to be willing to put in the work. You know, if you have a social media platform, you got to put up every day. If you have a YouTube channel, you got to have new content. You got to be feeding something to your viewers. And you said something very key, Lunde. You want a takeaway. Everybody wants a takeaway.
Right.
Anybody listening to this podcast wants a takeaway. They want to be able to hear something they don't hear anywhere else. They want to be able to go back. You know, I listened to that podcast with Reggie and Lunde, and, you know, they were talking about blah, blah, blah. They want a takeaway. You're enhancing the life of somebody. So to me, I think the YouTube is definitely, people are definitely more visual than they are audio. Podcasts are huge. Let's not be, you know, let's not pretend that they aren't. They are. And a lot of people can listen to podcasts while they're doing something else. But in this time now where people are home more, I think the visual comes along, because even if it's just, you know, a rotating box while you're talking, you may find you get more views on a YouTube than you will on just a straight podcast.
Before we close out, why do you think Black filmmakers should value people in your position?
I think because coming from the conversation with Francis Ford Coppola, I think one, Black film critics, any film critic is an influencer. So even if you only have 800 followers, those 800 followers are following you because they're interested in what you have to say. So that it's 800 more people that you as a filmmaker are going to get to see it. And those 800 people, you know, coming back to what Reggie asked before, the disparity between critics and the audience is that at the end of the day, okay, it's word of mouth. At the end of the day, if somebody read something from a film critic or heard a film critic talking about a film, they may see that film or they may be open to seeing the film. I mean, and let's face it, you're influencing people's opinions. If I tell you a movie is crap, don't waste your time. If you were thinking about seeing it, yeah, you were on the fence, you probably won't see it. Now, if there's a movie, conversely, that you would not have seen, and I tell you, oh, listen, this was a gem. See this movie. It's really good. Okay. You know, you're like, all right. You know, even if you're not going to go run out and put it in your queue, if you came across it, you might go, you know, I heard this was good. And so you might watch it. So I think that Black filmmakers and Black film critics have to have that relationship. We have to make each other better. We have to be able to, you know, support each other, but also call each other. I mean, if a filmmaker does some bullshit, I want to be able to say, dude, you know, nice cinematography, but that story was bullshit. I would think you would prefer, again, if I have an informed opinion, you know? Okay. And here's the other thing. Even if I don't necessarily have an informed opinion, there are definitely film critics I don't, you know, we don't see eye to eye, but if they've been doing this long enough, they have a perspective, just like I do, on what audiences go for, you know, and what will work, you know, irregardless, you know, there are certain films that are critic proof. Okay. And then there are certain films that critics love that will make no money. And you could say, okay, I like this film. It's great, but it will make no money. I have some of my favorite films are films that made no money. And I probably knew watching it at the time that this will not make any money because this is not, it's just not going to work in the marketplace. Now, at the same time, the other thing that a film critic can do, okay, and I would love to have a situation where film critics and filmmakers talk with each other, because that would probably be, that's a good idea. But is that, you know, very often a film is marketed wrong. How many times can you remember that you saw a film, you saw the trailer, and it's like you went in thinking one thing and you're like, this is not what I thought at all. And it's not your kind of movie, but you thought it was because of the trailer. Has that ever happened to either of you?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, right. And so that's a mistake that I think, you know, studios make because they're going for what they think is the biggest audience, but then they alienate the audience they would have had.
Right.
And all the way down the line, if they had maybe paid attention, you know, or listened to someone or brought in a, you know, somebody who understood better, I'd say film critic is definitely a good person to do that. They could have said, look, you can market this however you want, but when you get that action audience in there and there's only one fight scene, they're all going to trash it. And the word of mouth will eclipse it, and it will get bad word of mouth.
How can folks get in touch with you?
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to run through. I do two radio shows in WBA. I do one called Real World Fridays at 6:30. I do another one called Night Shift. And then I do two podcasts, one called Too Fast, Two Films. It's a number two. And I do another podcast called Brown and Black. And I do that with another film critic called Jack Rico. He's Latino, I'm Black. And that's really emphasizing, I mean, we review films, but we're also emphasizing, you know, the importance of unity between Brown and Black culture. But, on Instagram, I'm Mike on Screen. On Twitter, I'm Mike on Screen, and yeah, so Mike on Screen.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mike. This was like super interesting and fascinating and helpful for us as filmmakers. So keep fighting the good fight.
I plan to. Well, I appreciate you having me on. I hope I was able to answer all your questions. Well.
Yes, this was dope. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Black Film Space podcast. This episode was co-executive produced by Gabrielle Charles and Sino Gibson and was edited by Courtney Lett. If you're interested in being part of our community and attending events, please visit us at blackfilmspace.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Black Film Space. Subscribe to our email list and podcast. All right, see you soon.